Well, well, welcome. Good morning. It's good to see some of the old faces and regular. Our pleasure. The doors open, of course, at 10:30 and we're beginning at 11. And as is our custom, a volunteer reads the declaration, the announcements and so forth, briefly. And we suggest that if this is your first visit, stop at the desk or at the usher's table and avail yourself of one of these little pamphlets designed, of course, to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And of course, the policy of this lodge is explained on the rear of this little pamphlet. It says, it is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. Loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but doesn't concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounded conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. Since the true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And as you can tell by this one, it's advisable, if you wish, to pick up one, carry it around with you in your pocket, so that you can go into more detail as to what is stated here. Today being February the 4th, the Sunday, the topic today, Earth, our home and school. Of course, on Wednesdays, the doors open at 5:30, so you can come in and visit our library. References, dictionaries, and if some of the words you hear puzzle you, there will always be a volunteer to help you get a better understanding. Library closes so that you can begin at 7:30 to 8:30 in the study of the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. Everyone is invited. And yes, if you want to, you can inquire as to how do I volunteer and what do I have to do. Being in sympathy with what's set forth in this declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part, other than that which I myself determine. And that gives you an idea how we proceed. We covered everything, but as I said, before you leave, if you have further questions, ask the usher at the table. Now, as is our custom, before we begin the programs, a reading is chosen. And if some of the words puzzle you, we repeat. Library opens at 5:15. And you can come in and visit our library till it closes its empire. And what does Bodhisattva mean? What does this mean? Now bend thy head and listen well, O Bodhisattva. Compassion speaks and says, can there be bliss when all that lives must suffer? Shalt thou be saved and hear the whole world cry? Now thou hast heard that which was said. Thou shalt attain the seventh step and cross the gate of final knowledge, but only to wed woe if thou wouldst be taught Hagata. Follow upon thy predecessor's steps, remain unselfish till the endless end. Thou art enlightened, choose thy way. Behold the mellow light that floods the eastern sky. In signs of praise, both heaven and earth unite. And from the fourfold manifested powers, a chant of love arises, both from the flaming fire and flowing water, and from sweet smelling earth and rushing wind. Hark! From the deep, unfathomable vortex of that golden light in which the victor bathes, all nature's wordless voice in thousand tones ariseth to proclaim, joy unto ye, O men of Nyalba. A pilgrim hath returned back from the other shore. A new Arhan is born. Peace to all beings. And as we stated, Earth, our home and school.
Friends, our overall umbrella theme for the month of February is the care of the earth. And this is certainly not an unfamiliar theme. In the last 30, 40 years or so, the general awareness of human beings of all different nations and races is more attuned to the importance of caring not only for the earth, but the natural resources we get from the earth. And we also become more painfully aware that the materialism in thought and feeling that is in our nature at this time sometimes leads us to ignore that responsibility. Perhaps on one hand we care for the earth, but to only benefit from its resources personally. And sometimes we neglect any kind of care for the earth, extracting from it whatever resources we need to improve our lives, our commerce, our power, our wealth as nations. And so the earth is very much sometimes our footstool or our garbage dump or our source of resources, which we assume is endless but isn't. So in order to care for something, it really has to have value for you. So throughout the month, we are going to look at this subject of the care of the earth, not from a materialistic or personal point of view, but from the point of view of soul and spirituality, some of the ideas brought forth in the teachings of Theosophy. And in order to help us nurture proper care for the earth, we thought we'd have for our first title for this month, Earth, our home and school, because we think those two institutions inspire our deepest feeling and care. We may not particularly care for our experiences in school, but we want to make sure our schools are safe and well run for the children, our children, our hope. And of course, we may not particularly care for some of the experiences we have in our home growing up, but certainly some of the deepest feelings we have, if we have them, are from the attachments and feelings that we uniquely experience in the home life, wherever it may be, with the most primitive of circumstances or the most exalted of conditions. So home and school are things in our nature that we really care about. So if we can begin to think of the earth as our home and school, particularly from the point of view of spirit and soul, we'll get some understanding. Now, the teachings that we're going to be looking at are very ancient, timeless, we might say, and have been present on this earth for as long as there have been thinking humanity. In its totality, it represents the ancient wisdom religion, which is both scientific and religious, philosophical and ethical, practical and meditative. A portion of that accumulated wisdom, which had been preserved down through the ages and in ancient times only revealed in initiations to those who had earned the right to have this knowledge, is now available, at least a portion of it, thanks to the efforts of William Q. Judge and H.P. Blavatsky. And so the teachings of we have of theosophy at this time are but a portion of that ancient wisdom preserved and presented to the public for the first time. And some of the most previously secretive of those aspects had to do with the evolution, the nature of the earth. And hundreds of pages in the secret doctrine are devoted to its formation. So obviously we're not going to cover all those ideas today or even in the next month. It's a lifetime of study and consideration. But we can grab a few ideas. So we'll begin with this one, that the care of the earth is a uniquely human responsibility because it is our home and school as spiritual beings, as soul beings, if you will. Theosophy means divine wisdom regarding the, or spiritual knowledge, if you prefer that term, regarding the origin, nature, powers, and destiny of the soul. So theosophy begins with this idea that we are not, as human beings, material beings that have a soul created for us anew by some supreme divine creator for this one life. Rather, a human being is essentially in its inner nature, in its spiritual nature, a soul being that uses the temporary body as its appropriate vehicle tool for experience and growth. But that's just in the most particular of considerations, because we can go far beyond that and suggest that the entire universe exists or even came into existence for the experience and evolution of soul. It is the creative intelligence of soul that brought forth this universe for the purpose of gaining knowledge and wisdom under the impulse of the universal law of cycles. Now, of course, it is not just for the benefit, this universe and this earth is not just for the benefit and experience. It doesn't just exist for the benefit of the human soul, but for the soul, the creative, enduring intelligence that is in every kingdom of nature. Because theosophy teaches that everything is alive, conscious, intelligent in some degree, because it comes from and has a spark of that divine spiritual essence within its nature. So even this earth of ours that we're going to consider this month, because it is our particular home and school, is one of millions of worlds in this infinite universe suitable for the experience and growth of the collectivity of souls experiencing through the various kingdoms of nature. And although that is true, we're going to focus on the human experience because it is only a self-conscious thinker capable of free will, moral discernment, moral strength, discrimination, intellectual understanding, self-reflection. It is only the human soul that can properly care for the earth and has that particular responsibility. The laws that govern the coming forth of this earth, all the worlds and the universe itself, are universal in scope. So we study in theosophy such ideas as cycles, reincarnation, cause and effect. And so these fundamental laws of life may also be applied to our understanding of the earth as our home and school. So we begin with this idea that just like with the seasons and with our own bodies, the earth itself has periods of rest, periods of activity, periods of day and night, sometimes spoken of in the Eastern literature, periods of materialization and spiritualization. Not only that, worlds have their, just as a human being does, their periods of birth, growth, maturity, decay, and death, only to be reborn again. And of course, this is not an idea that we find only in theosophic literature. It can be found in many different sources, and of course, we'll just bring out one today from the Bhagavad Gita. In chapter 8, Krishna says to Arjuna, "All worlds up to that of Brahman are subject to rebirth again and again. But they, O son of Kunti, who reach to me, have no rebirth. Those who are acquainted with the day and night know that the day of Brahma is 1,000 revolutions of the yugas, and that his night extendeth for 1,000 more. At the coming on of that day, all things issue forth from the unmanifested into manifestation. So on the approach of that night, they merge again into the unmanifested. This collection of existing things, having thus coming forth, is dissolved at the approach of the night." So we have that presented in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explaining that to his disciple Arjuna. Now, theosophy adds to this much detail, or further explanation, which would have been known to some in the past, but now, as we said, is more public knowledge for those who want it. So the idea is that the earth, being a world, is also subject to rebirth again and again, or at least worlds themselves have their period of embodiment and disembodiment. And so this planet, or this globe we call our Earth, is the re-embodiment of a previous planetary world, which upon dying sent its energies and principles out into space and vivified a nearby nucleus of cosmic substance. And more specifically then, the ancient teachings point to the moon, or what we can see in the sky as the moon, as the parent of the earth. And it still circles around the earth like a mother circling around the crib of the child, exerting its influence. So we have this idea of life coming to an end on that previous globe, its disintegration and a throwing off of its energies in space to give birth, or give re-embodiment and force, to a new center of evolution. So this center, this mass of ethereal cosmic substance, first becomes a rotating nebulous mass, which eventually forms the Earth. Not the Earth that we know, but initially a very ethereal mass or collection of substance. And through ages, the details of which we are not going to go into, but through ages, there is a gradual condensation, a materialization of that substance. And every form that ever was or will be on this earth is but a re-embodiment, a recombination of that primordial substance, that substance. So it's a constant re-embodying of substance on this earth. Now, we're told that this does not happen chaotically or just in response to external conditions, but remember that preliminary idea that the entire universe, this earth itself, exists for the benefit of soul, or conscious, creative, spiritual intelligence. So this gradual condensation and preparation, materialization of the earth, although it occurs under cyclic law, just as the tides come back and forth and the sun moves, the earth and planets move around the sun and the seasons come back, and the blood circulates through the body, even though it follows this general law of cycles as an impulse, its specific development and the development of the kingdoms of nature, the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, and human, are guided by creative spiritual intelligence who are use the earth, or who gain experience and further spiritual growth from the earth. And where did they come from? Well, they had previously evolved as spiritual intelligences on the moon, and then now gain their spiritual growth and evolution on the earth. So once again, if we go back to Krishna in that chapter 8, he explains this. Speaking of the coming forth of worlds and their gradual manifestation gradually becoming unmanifested. But there is that which upon the dissolution of all things else, is not destroyed. It is indivisible, indestructible, and of another nature from the visible. So soul, spirit, is not destroyed when the form it uses, whether it be a body or a globe, comes to an end. All forms have their beginning end, but that which is changeless, eternal, one it's in its essence with the divine source of life, has no beginning or ending, but is always consciously experiencing, learning, and working in some condition or another. So we might try to apply the method of analogy and correspondence. It's a useful method when we're trying to get a grasp on some sometimes very metaphysical ideas and bring them down to earth, so to speak, and apply them to our everyday lives. So the analogy of how we build a home or a school just on this physical plane is very useful for us to begin to understand this process. So how do we begin? Well, if we're building a home, we had previously, as a collectivity of family, or perhaps an individual, but usually a family, had lived in another environment, and now that environment no longer suits us, and we need to move into another area. And if we have the resources, we are going to build that home or school according to the needs and necessities of growth of the people in the family or the people in the school. And we bring to that our experience and our power from our previous home and school and situations in which we grew. So what do? Well, we have an idea in our mind of what we want, but we may need to conference with experts in other areas. So we first have an idea in our mind of what the school will look like or what the home will look like. And then with the aid of architects and draftspeople, we begin to get a sketch or a blueprint and can put it down on paper, but it looks nothing like the school or a house. It's more like a code with signs and symbols, an ideal form which represents the house that will be or the school that will be. And so, and today, of course, with computers, we can actually get a virtual image or a model on a screen of what that house will eventually look like, even though it doesn't exist as a form. And so then, having done that, we gather together the builders and all the individuals who will be involved, but the house just doesn't appear all of a sudden. At first, it's just a frame, a foundation, and then bit by bit, we begin to add in the details of the wiring, of the plumbing, of the the tiling, and then even before the family moves in, they might just add their own personal little touches to make it their home. So there's a whole process beginning from the most ideal stage to the actual physical form when we have a home. And so that is an analogy for us of how this earth that we know came into being. In its first stages, in this ethereal cosmic substance state, this massive energy and substance, the details of the earth only existed in an idea, an idea of what the different kingdoms would be. And then over millions and millions of years, as there was that gradual condensation and the earth entered what we in a very general call the astral stage of its development, the model stage, very similar to the architectural drawings. At that stage, the kingdoms of nature, the earth itself, was in this very astral form. But over another long period of time, it gradually condensed, and all the forms that we see now and the elements and the minerals are now in the shape we have. But that's constantly changing and evolving according to cyclic law, but also according to the needs and impulses behind the scenes of spiritual intelligence. Just like we, as we develop a new school or a house, create new homes and new schools according to the input and direction of our energy and thought. So that is in general what theosophy teaches about the origin of the earth and its construction. And although it can get very detailed, and even as we present it, it seems metaphysical, the main takeaway point is that this earth exists through the influence and direction of spiritual intelligence for the purpose of the growth and experience of soul, or that spiritual intelligence. And we are, in our nature, an individualized soul, a center of free will and thought, creative power. So we have within our nature the ability to influence the direction in which this earth will manifest itself, and the way the different forms of life will manifest themselves. So we can work with the plan of nature, or we can work ignorant of that plan, or we can just be careless and not give it any thought at all. So what is it that's growing in all these experiences provided by the earth and the kingdoms of nature? Well, we said everything is alive and intelligent and conscious in its own degree, from the mineral to the highest being we can think of, because there is that spark of the divine essence in each being, each form. And so in the mineral kingdom, we see the expressions of intelligence suitable for that kingdom. We see various expressions of cohesion, of affinity, how certain minerals will naturally be attracted to one another or repulsed by one another, or will combine in certain ways to release creative force or destructive force, how minerals can grow in specific geometrical designs, and that can be influenced by the environment. Even water, experiments show, is sensitive, is impressionable, and coheses and arranges itself. The molecules of water arrange themselves through the influence of human thought. So there's a degree of intelligence there. And in the plant vegetable kingdom, we see the sensitivity and sensation of plants. They may not be able to move from one place to another, but they can definitely move and respond to the influence of the environment. Their roots can reach out and find water. They can grow and survive in the most difficult of situations. They can apparently grow out of a pavement or out of the side of a wall. They just have this ability to search out and find the nutrients of light and water and heat that they need to thrive. We see it more definitely in the instinct of the animal kingdom. And of course, in the human kingdom, we see the expression of individual self-consciousness, awareness of spiritual wisdom. So this unique aspect of mind or intelligence, this self reflection, this ability to have self-conscious spiritual realization, is due to the incarnation, the embodiment in the human form of a mind being. And this occurs at a certain time in the evolution of the earth. And from that point on, the evolution of the earth and the evolution of the mind being is directed, is influenced by the way we think and feel and choose as mind beings. We can either delay or we can accelerate the progress of the evolution around us to a certain degree. So what lessons do we as spiritual beings, as soul beings, as mind beings, learn from the earth? And of course, we could spend the rest of the morning, and maybe will, looking at these different kinds of lessons we learn in this school we call the earth. But we thought we might just begin with a few ideas. And one is that basically the earth teaches us, our experience on the earth teaches us about ourselves. It provides hundreds of varieties of conditions, and each of these environments affects each of us differently, psychologically, spiritually, morally. Just take the one condition of travel, traveling to another country, which we can only do on the earth. That experience will affect each one of us differently psychologically. Will we feel relaxed when we go? Will we bring our troubles with us? Will we become inspired by the spiritually by the experience? Will we allow our lower desires to dominate when we travel? Each of us respond differently to that one condition and learn something about ourselves, but also each one of us not only reacts to it, but acts on the earth in a different way too, guided by our morality, our emotions, and thought. So there are just endless, just one experience can, or two experiences can account for endless combinations of experiences for us as human beings. And in one time in our life, travel may affect us one way, and another time of life, it affects us a different way. But throughout of it, what are we learning? As reflective, self-conscious beings, we are learning something about ourselves. So the earth is our school, and our purpose here, we might say, is to learn something about ourselves. As we go through these experiences, we learn what we are attached to, what we passionately feel about and have to have at all costs, and are willing to fight for and die for, or willing just to not care about. What we are attached to, what we believe ourselves to be, even though they are temporary, there's some conditions that we really identify with and can't let go with it. Our whole purpose of our life is wrapped up in that experience. Well, our experience here on earth teaches us what we identify with, what has meaning to us, what we are attached to. And also, in spite of the fact that all these things, this endless progression of variations, of changes and temporary experiences on the earth, also make it clear to ourselves, because we can discern the difference between the spiritual and the material, we have that innate intuition and self-conscious knowledge of these things, we can distinguish between what in our experience on earth is changeless and eternal and what is temporary and conditional. We can see that we are not all these experiences that we go through, but we are the witness of them, that we don't have to identify them and say we are these things, but we can say, no, these are conditions, and we are the being or the soul that is the experiencer of them. They come and go, but I, as the perceiver, the knower, am not continue to go on. I can grow from it, but my being, my identity, is not permanently affected by it. These are all important spiritual lessons as soul beings that we learn by our journey here on earth, our school, and by which we, and our home here on the earth gives us the opportunity to live on the earth, to make our contribution to the earth, but not be of it, not so be so identified and attached to it that believe that our experience here is the beginning and end all of life. That there is more to life, there is more to nature, there is more to our nature and our purpose than just what we experience on this material plane. So we've tried to just give an outline, an overview of a subject that can have impact on the way we care for the earth, and we are going to look into this throughout the weeks to come. This month, we're going to look at the earth as a living entity. We're going to look at some of the causes of the cataclysms and catastrophes. And we're going to look at more detail of the interdependence and the interrelationship between all the kingdoms of this planet. So at this time, we'll stop and invite your questions and comments on this very interesting and apparently practical subject. So any thoughts, questions? Yes.
So then if this earth is a re-embodiment of itself from a previous set of conditions, then all of life around us, the forests, the trees, the kingdoms of nature, everything was there as different kingdoms of nature as well, and taken a next step up? Is that how we would see it?
Well, if we think of the kingdoms of nature, the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdom, that there were forms of those kingdoms appropriate to the conditions of the globe at that time. And just as there are forms and conditions of the plants and the mineral kingdoms that vary now according to the environment. So you can take a certain species of plant that grows a certain way in a tropical environment and grows a completely different way in another environment. You can take a certain species of fish that in one condition differentiates and becomes female, and in another condition differentiates and becomes male. So if even on in our experience of life as it is now, the kingdoms of nature can change dramatically in different conditions, we can understand how the forms of those kingdoms can vary throughout the changing conditions of the earth. And even in the Bible, it's interesting. Even in the Bible, if we look through those first chapters of Genesis, we see that there's two creations of the animal kingdoms and the vegetable kingdoms. We see that there's a creation of the animals and the vegetables and the animals before man, then in the God creates Adam and Eve, and then there follows a second creation of the animals and the vegetables. And God says to Adam and Eve, and that you be fruitful and multiply, and go forth. So this gives us the idea that there are different stages, or different evolutions, or different processes, or different times in the manifestations of these forms. So they change over time. They do. Yes?
So could we say that the manifestation itself, however it comes about, would have to do with the perception of all that's there in such a way, okay, that it would gather enough energy to actually be manifested in a physical form?
Okay. So there would have to be the perception of it and then the energy to manifest it in physical form. So let's just take a few examples of that from, for example, dreams. So there was an individual, his name's Kekule, and he had this vision in one of his dreams of the structure of the benzene ring, the carbon ring. There was another individual who had a vision of spears moving up and down in a vertical way. And from this, he was able to have the energy and creativity to reproduce that to help him solve a problem in sewing. And this individual eventually invented the sewing machine. There are individuals who have had in their mind symphonies, stories, Mozart, Robert Louis Stevenson, who saw something in a form, in a inner, we'll say, astral form and substance, not of this earth, but could recognize it as something, and using their own mind and creative energy and will, were able to reproduce it on this physical plane. So that, in a way, is analogous to the process, that there are conditions in the formation of the earth where things are much different than are right now, and it takes the creative energy of spiritual beings to bring it forth into representation on the physical plane. In the various traditions in the Bible and in Eastern philosophies and religions, it speaks of this in various ways. But the underlying truth behind all of that is that it is spiritual intelligence, creative intelligence, we working to bring forth these different ideas. And that's basic, and we do that ourselves. If we want to, it tells us if you have to cease, you have to, if you conceive, there's this old saying we remember, if you can see it and believe it, you can achieve it. That idea. You have to see it in your mind, in your imagination, even before it exists. You have to believe in it. You have to have the faith in yourself and in that thing, and you have the will and energy. And if you do that and you hold on to that long enough, you'll eventually be able to produce it on the physical plane. This very power and this energy has a name in Sanskrit called Kriya Shakti, and it's basically a soul power that if you think about something long enough, it will eventually manifest in your life. It's the same creative process. Yes.
Many individuals on this planet have these great ideas, which lead to destruction of Earth, pollution of Earth, excavation of all the natural resources, leading to severe karmic consequences for humanity, including those individuals as well. Wouldn't human development be a little bit more straight and narrow and highly more intelligent had the veil between our conscious and unconscious been lifted, giving humans the ability to develop on this planet in a more intelligent manner without that blinders in between?
Yes. Well, it's an interesting question, and it brings us back to once again, why we are here. And we're not just here for our own growth and development as soul, but to lift up, to raise up the intelligence that's in all the kingdoms of nature. We have said are spiritual thinkers, mind beings, but there is a degree of intelligence in all the kingdoms of nature. And all those kingdoms of nature are represented in our bodily form. We have aspects of the mineral, vegetable, animal kingdom in our nature, and we can feel the intelligence of those aspects in our nature. We can feel the instinct and the passions of the animal nature and so forth. But we also know that within our nature there is another kind of intelligence that's self-reflective, that's determined, that can choose to follow instincts or not, that can be aware of abstractions and put them into concrete manifestations that can create conditions that can make themselves better or make themselves worse. There is a creative intelligence there. And so that, in order for us as spiritual beings to lift up, to evolve as ourselves, to know ourselves, we have to get ourselves involved get embodied in nature. And it is this very process of getting ourselves involved in a certain form with the limitations of the senses, of the feelings, of the thoughts involved that temporarily blind us. Not only that, we begin to act and react in certain ways that make things worse for ourselves. So part of the process is getting involved, and part of the process is from that confusion and darkness that we experience to make the effort to wake up and begin to lift ourselves up again in all of nature. So before we can evolve, improve ourselves, we have to involve into the very lowest of conditions in order to lift all of life. and to know those things. How can you know really good things if you haven't experienced the worst things? And most of our experiences in life are unpleasant. Not all of them, but they are unpleasant. But they don't have to be. They don't have to be negatives. They can give us opportunities to become stronger, more compassionate, grow, exert our energies, learn more things, take advantage of opportunities that we wouldn't do if things were going well for us all the time. If all we had to do was wake up every morning and come down to breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which is thoroughly abundant, we soon would become very nonchalant and take for granted food. But when you have to work for it, when you have to prepare it, when you have to earn it, you not only enjoy the food, you're sustained by it, but you continue your appreciation for it. And so that's what life does for us. We get just what the soul needs in terms of experience, good or bad, to keep us aroused in our energy and our purpose once we recognize ourselves to be soul beings, not just material or animal, temporary beings. Yes?
We've always been fascinated by the seed industry in this country and in other countries, how they produced food, vegetables, fruit, and so forth. It is not like it, the original. We're thinking of Burpee and some of the others in their work, so that we go to the market and buy fruit, vegetables, and seeds far better looking than what our parents and grandparents.
Well, we know that much of the food we have and the quality of the food in a certain way is the result of human knowledge and experience in manipulating nature to a certain way. And food may be certain abundant. But if on the other hand we are depleting our soils in the process, making them less nutrient dense, there's that too. So we can manipulate nature in order to make a better product, but at the same time we have to take care of it and preserve it so those seeds will come forth in the right environment. So this is the whole science that's developed out of awareness that we need to care for the earth. We have to exert our highest skill and knowledge on the kingdoms if we are going to survive as physical beings. But taking it beyond that, we need healthy bodies, the best we can, strong bodies, good conditions to work in if we are going to evolve spiritually too. And in a sense, the better the conditions on earth, the better the forms, the more opportunity for the soul working through it to gain its experience. You can be a genius in playing the violin, but if you're given a faulty instrument with broken strings and out of tune and poor wood and warped sounding board, you can't produce the kind of masterpiece you could with a much better violin. So we stand in that same relationship. There was a question. Yes?
The earth goes through many changes. It's told that it's alive as well. So these changes that it goes through affect the people on it. Now, is there a direct correlation between the people on it and how the planet reacts?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it react? Or
yes.
Does it just simply absorbs everything?
Well, this is a very interesting question, and as we said, in the weeks to come, we're going to be looking at the answer to that question in much more detail. Next week, we're going to be looking at the Earth as a living entity. So as an entity, it's not just a lump. It's like every other entity, and we're going to see the principles and the processes involved in that entity, which are very much like the principles and processes involved in our own nature as human beings. We'll see the similarities and the correspondences. And then in the following week, we're going to look at the influence of our thought and feeling, how the earth responds to it, not just naturally, but in the process of cataclysms and catastrophes of nature. And then finally, the interaction between the kingdoms, how we affect them as thinkers more specifically, and how they affect us. So all this becomes our resource in how we go about in caring for the earth. And we just don't mean the earth in general, but that portion of the earth which is represented in our nature. Our bodies are like small earths. How do we care for our body as an earth in miniature? How do we care for our gardens, for the environment in which we grow, the animals, the substance we use? How do we think about it? How do we respect it? What is our attitude towards the life within that form, the purpose to which we put it? All of the earth itself and everything we can experience, all can be directed towards the evolution of soul and spirit. Like Krishna says, when everything comes and goes, has its beginning and end, evolves, manifests, and dissolves, and goes into unmanifestation, when all that comes and goes, that day and night, there is still something which is eternal, that doesn't change, and that is our very selves as spiritual beings. So the more we know that, the more we can direct all our activity towards that goal with that idea in mind. So there is that connection, but we're going to leave it up to others to go into that in more detail. Yes?
So I'm thinking here, as I'm hearing this, that even with our best of intentions as spiritual beings and wishing to bring forth something good, we have to constantly be paying attention to the effects of what manifests from our own good intentions, and be willing to look at it from time to time and look at it with a scientific approach and say, well, this isn't what I wanted to happen, and that brings myself to mind how much we need each other.
Yes.
Because we don't see everything all the time ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we are, in effect, needing each other.
Yeah. And what you're saying is, so now, okay, so what's our attitude towards the earth? Well, let's say the earth, on the earth in a very general way, well, this is where we work, this is where we go to school, this is where we communicate with other experiences. Now, we don't think of the earth in that way. We think of it turning our house, our community, our neighborhood, our nation, which is a portion of the earth, but this is where we are now, and this is where we have our experiences. And as was pointed out there, now, when we wake up and we go through our day, we can pay more attention to how all those experiences affect us. What is our emotional, our intellectual, our spiritual, our moral response to those conditions? How does it affect us? What kind of feelings do we have? How do we respond to that? And if we don't like the way or we're responding or the way we're reacting, we don't think it's in line with ourselves as spiritual beings, we can begin to make changes in the way we respond. The first effect will be on our own earth, our own body. And then we'll see the effect in those that are so closely associated with us because they are affected by the way we think. We'll see it in our families, our co-workers, our co-students, other people respond to us. And as more individuals work that way, it begins to have an effect on the nation and the world as a whole. This is a process of ages, but it begins every moment of our lives. So we'll stop here and invite you to attend next week, where the subject, as we said, will be on the earth, a living entity. Our meeting's adjourned.